Hi there. Today I'm here with Jeff Triplett. He is a software engineer. He is active at the Django Software Foundation, and he's partner at a company called RevSys, which specializes in consultancy for Django customers. Django is a web framework. For those of you who don't know it, it's around for 20 years, and I'm very excited to talk to you about like the technical details of what it means in today's world. Jeff, how's it going?
It's great. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here. And AI, just so I can try to make the record for the quickest use of AI.
I think you just broke the record of mentioning it first. AI, thank you. But before we come to that, let us talk about like the history of Python or the Django framework. I mentioned it. It is around for 20 years. Version 6 came along quite recently, a couple of weeks ago. It all seems very slow in the Django world, but also very mature. So tell us about your first steps with the framework.
Yeah, sure. I was working at an ISP in Joplin, Missouri, of all places, and I was director of operations for a small company, and we were doing wireless internet. And we also kind of lucked into getting a dial-up ISP, and they had this portal, and we decided we were rewriting part of it in Python, or sorry, with PHP. And that gave me an opportunity because, you know, PHP applications were pretty easy to write the first 90% and harder to write the last 10%. And right around that time, Django was released, and I looked at it and I found this Lawrence.com like community portal website at the time. And just everything about it, I just fell in love with. And I started looking at the framework they were using because I thought, wow, here's this small newspaper group out of Kansas. They're doing some amazing stuff here. Like they had events, they had like little league baseball teams had like little cards and stuff. So they were propping these kids up to look like they were major league baseball stars and stuff. So they were doing all kinds of awesome stuff with both the newspaper and this community portal. And so we took a stab at learning Django, had our own. It was Joplin.com at the time. I would not visit that today because I have no idea what's even there. And we kind of built a cool community portal, like a business listings, business directory, all kinds of really neat stuff for news and events. And there was just a very small, like just a couple of us doing this. And so that kind of taught me that like you can do a lot of things very quickly with Django, you know, 20 years ago. And it's done nothing but get better since then. You're right, though. It does move at what feels like a slow pace. They just added task support so you can do like offline queues. And they kind of laid the framework down so you can build on those frameworks. They kind of, you know, made a framework to be able to do this. So over the next year or so, you're going to see more third-party queues start to take advantage of that. So, you know, that took 20 years to get to, but it's a great feature to finally have.
Absolutely. I mean, there's Django Salary for those of you who have played with Django a bit. But yeah, I can totally relate to like your origin story with Django. It was PHP for me as well. We started out with a wizard for finding like methodologies for business project. You would answer a couple of questions and then the ORM goes around, finds the right methodologies, and then you get a scorecard and you get an introduction video of that. And at that time, Django felt really feature complete in a way. Like they were a very powerful ORM, which I think still is the core to Django. There was a very powerful templating language, way better than Smarty or whatever was around in PHP. People started building stuff with it in a very monolithic way, but there were Django apps. So they kind of started the unpacking the monolith stuff quite early. So what are Django apps specifically?
We've got a pretty good ecosystem of like third-party applications. Like if you want to do, you know, like as WordPress is to PHP, you have Wagtail CMS for Django, you have Django CMS. And it's just basically like an application you can run that uses Django. So you can install these and just it's just such an interesting world. Cause like with PHP, there was a lot of like, you could use projects, but you had to copy the code, you know, for the project physically inside your website and figure out how to integrate it. Django kind of introduced the ability to have these apps, which are like plugins. And so you can plug a CMS into your website, and it's usually, you know, UV install, pip install something. It's add it to your installed apps. It's add the URLs at whatever path you want them to go into. And so Django has, I run Django packages .org with a small group. And, you know, I think we've got like 5,000 or 6,000 third-party packages that we like catalog and index for the site. And so just about anything you want to build, you can go look on PyPI or GitHub, and you're going to find the Django project, Python project that does it. And so, and you may not like it, but also with it being open source, you can fork it and you can kind of create your own with it. So it's just a much different world than 20 years ago. It was like, oh, well, this, here's a template language and it kind of sucks, or maybe this one's pretty good. Ironically, Django templates were based on Smarty. And so all the things we didn't like about Smarty, like, it kind of came over, but they had enough of a take on it that I think it took off and it had the right separations of concerns.
Interesting. I didn't know that. So how did that play along? Like, Smarty was a PHP templating engine, which is kind of ironic because PHP already is kind of a templating language. But anyway,
exactly.
They managed to create it their own.
Yeah, I think at the time they used Smarty as kind of a, you know, just as a guideline for like what should a templating language be? Because I believe Andrea and Simon, I believe one of them used Smarty at one point, or at least somebody told me a story once that they had used it. And so they just kind of were going with what they knew. And, you know, it wasn't terrible to try to recreate that, you know, double bracket syntaxes and stuff in Django. So,
yeah, to me, the biggest difference was in the difference between include and extend. So like usually Smarty people would go and include files. Like you have like your header and your footer, and in between there is your content. Whereas in Django, it's more like extends. So you have a base template, and the more specific you get, the more concrete the template is that you include. Back to the apps, it's not only like a packaging system for third-party apps, it's also like a way how to structure your own code, right?
Yeah, and this is a concept I hope in future versions of Django they kind of line out, because there's this, what is a project versus what is an app? To me, it's a, you know, developing apps is a folder, and you can create models. You can decide models are like what's going to talk to your database or live in your database through the ORM. You can package those and share them with other people if you want. You can build on it. I do a lot with vibe coding and Django apps now. And because the LLMs have been trained on, and I forget the stats name, but when you look at the coding competitions and you see like when they rank an LLM for how good it is at coding, about 46% of that is solving Django problems. And so even if the LLM companies aren't using Django to like write their applications, they're training on Django and they're training on Django's issues. Yeah. And so it's amazing to see that much Django. So what this means is Django is a cheat code for vibe coding, because LLMs understand the problems very well. And so I have a lot of success with it because it already understands it, because they're training on it. So they know how to like score better in their coding competitions or their
Is benchmark. That 46% like overall or specific to Python?
Overall.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah, so it's like 46.2% or
training,
something.
Half of the training is for Django?
Just about, yeah.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. And I forget the benchmarks, but we can look them up and add them in the show notes or something. But I saw a white paper a couple of months ago about it, and it blew my mind too, because I'm like, this is amazing.
Yeah, so basically what Django is a full-stack web framework, right? So we covered like the structuring of your code with apps, which is like sub distinction from a project. You have a lot of tools for task, you mentioned. We have the ORM, we have a templating engine. And then fast forward a couple of years, and now the whole world is talking about mobile apps. Maybe that was early 2000s. Then the whole world is talking about APIs, and the whole world is talking about single page applications. So how did Django evolve into today's world?
Well, at some point, Instagram kind of hit the scene. And then I think that was a really pivotal time for Django, because I think Instagram still uses Django 1.1 or 1.3. And I think they've rewritten a bunch of it because the app is so big. And so around that time, then, you know, Django at the time really didn't have a Rust framework built in, but we had serializers and you could generate JSON code. I think when Instagram was created, you know, it was created in a weekend or two, and it was written in Django originally. And I think as we watch Instagram scale up to be a web app, I think that was an inflection point for Django as far as like turning from just a web framework to one that could do REST APIs. At the time, like, you know, Django has always been good at consuming JSON. We have serializers built in so we can output JSON. And so, but we've never really like mentioned that Django, like even looking up the docs for like, can Django do REST and, you know, what can Django do as far as the web story goes? We've had a strong web template story. We haven't had a REST API story as strong. So there's a third-party package called Django REST Framework that's been really popular for a decade and a half. There's been some others like Spring up too that are a little newer. But like, I think, and you know, like we've seen some other packages like Python frameworks like Django, or it's like Fast APIs one. And so they've really kind of sprung up the last couple of years and gotten really popular because they're just API first. And so that made us realize that we need to change our docs and let people know that the Django project, the Django framework itself, it actually can do REST APIs. And there's no reason to not use Django with these things because, you know, like you mentioned earlier, we have all these batteries that are included, like the ORM, like the Django admin that you just get for free. When I did PHP, the thing I hated the most was writing admin code. Like I just hated that like CRUD-based views. And that's really what's kept me with Django for a long time. I went to PyCon US this year and I had a dozen people ask me, how do I use the Django ORM with Fast API? And that was like a signal to me that like, wow, we're really losing the marketing game here. If people want to use Fast API, but they want to use the Django ORM, that's technically going to be the slowest part of your, you know, your performance. And so like, why do you even like, what is Fast API giving us on a front end that Django's not? And really it's nothing. We have async views now. But like, it's just that story and showing people how to like easily create a Fast API project is really nicely done. And so those are goals that we need to work on to keep Django here another 20 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Love it. I mean, like Fast API is like another big player in the framework world of the Python community. But Django. So again, like we have REST framework that's still, I mean, at that time, Rails had something like CoffeeScript. They had their own flavor of JavaScript, which they would transpile. There was nothing really like that in Django for building JavaScript-heavy frontends, but still somehow people are using it. So what is a strategy to build a modern frontend for Django applications?
I think that kind of shifts. React was really big for a while. Now we've seen React numbers start to kind of go back the other way because, you know, for a while there was, I like it was 5 or 10 years where people just wanted the Django front end just to emit JSON and that was it. And then now we've seen more reactive frameworks like HTMX come out. And then another Django 6.0 feature was partials, which lets you define little template snippets that you can just render that partial. So you don't have to re-render the whole page. And so we're seeing that take off with HTMX and other like-minded frameworks. And so it's just this ebb and flow. And I know like we're starting to see more like server-heavy applications again. And Django's really performant at doing that. But I don't doubt that in another 3 to 4 years, we're going to see more REST APIs or whatever the next generation of REST APIs. In 2 decades of working with Django, I've seen this ship go in and out a couple of times. And so absolutely. You just kind of have to know where you're at in the cycle and then remember what are the advantages. I think the biggest thing with like getting rid of that JavaScript stack was it's just much quicker to write applications and you don't have that handoff of like, how do I hire a dev that's a full stack dev versus hand it off to a team that wants all of the endpoints to be done before they touch anything. And, you know, now, especially with like vibe coding and small teams, like it's amazing that you can ship features and half hour, a couple of hours. A lot has changed, I think, because of that stack.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the last 20 years, you mentioned it, wild times. The buzzwords changed a lot over then, flew back, flew in, back and forth, all that kind of stuff. So more impressive it is that Django is maturing and like still at a very slow pace, but also like at a very confident pace in a way that it doesn't react to any or to every buzzword or trend or something like that. I think that's also like a very important aspect of Django's success, right?
Yeah, I think it is. And I think it's fair to acknowledge times when we move maybe too slow and we have to do a little bit of catch up. We also have a new steering council who's the kind of the technical leadership in the Django community. And we have a new council as of, I think, a year ago. And there's a lot of people on the steering council who think we should have fewer batteries than not, but they added a lot of batteries for 6.0. And I think that was the right decision. So with like template partials, adding tasks into Django. And I like this approach that they're doing with tasks because they're not trying to ship a full-blown like implementation, but they're adding the framework that you can hook into. And so as you mentioned, Django Celery can take advantage of that. Django Q2 is one of my favorites. There's also Django Tasks. So starting to see these applications like build into Django and know that like Django ships with the right batteries or at least the right like component that the batteries fit into, I think that's pretty powerful and it makes a better like cohesive system for people to be able to work with. Like Django having multiple email backends or ORM backends. Like that's really nice because like we have MongoDB, which I've not used, but that's a third-party package that MongoDB, you know, company can create. And they know that the ORM can like slide in and work with Django. And so it's pretty awesome to see the framework kind of trying to like help with the plumbing itself without having full opinions about, you know, what's going through the pipes, I guess. It's a really bad analogy, but like, it kind of made sense when I started.
But it does. I mean, that is one of the strengths of Django. It's I mean, it is opinionated, but in some areas it is less opinionated than, I don't know, the latest and greatest JavaScript framework and such. But you mentioned it already, like among these and in a fast-paced world that we are living in, you sometimes, for Django, lose the marketing game a bit. So in that sense, from your experience at RefSys and with existing clients, who is an ideal development team to use Django for which kind of project?
Who's an ideal development team? Like, you mean big or small, or what's
big or small, and what projects would they build with it? Like, who is the primary or ideal customer for Django?
Really, it's you have a Python shop, or if you're tired of things taking months to get features out and shipping. I think Python, Python was never my favorite programming language until I started using it, but I always felt like it had the most readable code. And I started with Pascal and C and Java and C++, you know, during college years and stuff. And so I kind of landed on Python as like, you take somebody off the street and put, you know, C# code in front of them or JavaScript, they're going to say, what the hell is half of this? But you give them Python and they can read it and it mostly makes sense. Now, granted, the kind of problems that we solve, humans don't understand. It takes training to know, like, what's an ORM? What are these things? I even went to a Postgres meetup in Kansas City last month. And the number of Postgres developers who work on Postgres every day, and they have no clue what an ORM even is. Like, they don't know. And these are people that have written, like, you know, worked for, like, Oracle databases and stuff for 20, 30 years. And so it's just a whole other world as far as what humans understand versus our world, you know. I think Django excels at small teams, excels with big teams too. We've worked with clients that have hundreds of devs, probably a couple that had thousands of devs. So I think it can fit all. Like we've had clients that during like political season, like politifact.com is one of our clients. And we love the work that they do for like fact checking. And there's been times that sites hit 7 to 35 million hits an hour. And so Django can go pretty big scale. Also CDNs now, Cloudflare, Fastly, those work so well that even small one or two server sites can really scale up to millions of hits an hour. So I see people sometimes like say that they want to like over-optimize what their site can do because they're started some weekend project and it's really going to like kick off. And so they're trying to, let's use Kubernetes because we're going to need this level of scale. And it's like, you're just kind of spinning your wheels. Like you could really focus on writing a good application, get it out there, and you can go a long ways with the CDN.
Yeah, absolutely. And this brings me to another point, like deployment and scalability. One point of criticism that Python or Django gets a lot is like performance, which I don't think applies these days because Python has a lot of work done in terms of improving the interpreter. But still, Django as a monolithic framework, it doesn't break down to microservices. It doesn't have like a native Kubernetes app or something like that. So what's your response to people demanding that? Or like say, well, do we just stick with the monolith?
I think monoliths are fine. If you're selling like a, if you've got a product that's more of a service and you need it to be a microservice, I think that's a fine business model to have. I don't think, you know, when people talk about scaling, I don't think 100 different microservices with 100 different databases. I've seen clients do that. That's not scaling well either. And now you have 100 databases to keep up with and other problems. And then you centralize auth. And now it's like, why don't you just check a database versus like trying to talk over REST to talk to a database to talk to something else. Like, it's just too much to fit in your head. I don't think the performance story of Django and Python, Python's removing the GIL, the global interpretable lock, and that's like I think 3.4 and 3.15 of the language takes care of that. And they're starting to give you the ability to test now so you can see what your code is going to look like. I don't think performance is the problem anymore. I think our deployment story is crap. And I think that's something that we really need to focus and work on. There's Django Prod Server is an application that I really like. And it's people starting to make the development story. What they're trying to do is they're saying like there's 12 steps to deploy your code right now. And Django to a fault, when you build that application, we're really good at walking you through the story of like, here's a working cool Django app that you want to build. And then when it comes time to deploy it in production, it's like, well, just go to some other projects and figure it out. Like we have a document, but it's the level that it takes to build an app versus deploy an app is night and day. And we need to be better about that. But like Django Prod Server and some really smart people are now starting to work on the problem and say, let's take it from 12 steps down to 10, maybe to 9, maybe to 8. And if we keep iterating every year and knock a step or two off, we will get there and it will be a better story. I think PHP always wins because you can rsync or you can copy your PHP code directly to a server and it just kind of runs in a way that Python doesn't allow. But like you can do things like turn Python code into WASM. You can run Django via WASM-ish. And I think the game changes a lot with technology getting better. And like with languages like Rust supporting WASM, JavaScript has WASM support. I don't know. It's getting really, really interesting to see. So I think in 10 years, when we look back, we may not have as bad of a story as what we thought we have today.
Absolutely. So what is the problem with the deployment process right now? It's 12 steps and but what does these 12 steps like include?
Well, part of it is you kind of get into the camps of who uses Docker, who doesn't use Docker. I use Docker because I feel like it kind of solves, it lets me skip a lot of steps. And I can go to like a Fly.io or I don't know, insert mini services that just let you push a Docker image to it. I'm using Hetzner now and Coolify. Coolify is just a service that lets you like kind of manage your servers for you. And so I like to do the cheat code of if I've got a Docker file and I can build it in Docker and run it local, then I know I'm not going to have any problems in production pushing it. And so I tend to go that way. If you're just trying to learn Python and run Django, telling you to go use Docker is kind of like flipping you the middle finger, you know? It's like, here's a whole other thing I have to learn, another skill I have to have. So I just look at it as with PHP code, you can write like a one file index.php that doesn't have dependencies. And
Absolutely.
you can just put that on a server and it just runs. The Python story is you have to have something that can run that. And so you have to get through like what is the gateway you have to talk to get to your service that's running. Django Prod Server kind of skips a couple of steps and it actually will run like it gives you options to pick. Or it gives you a sensible default for like, you need to use Gunicorn or you need to use uWSGI. And so it kind of makes that more of like an installable default than a install two or three things that you don't even know you need and then try to figure out how to configure it.
So how does it work in practice with a Django Prod Server? I have a Django project, and then
Yeah,
what
you
do
can
I need
do
to do?
like a UV install Django Prod Server. And then you can use the bracket syntax to default to Gunicorn or UWSGI. Mm-hmm. And then in installed apps, you add Django prod server. And then it gives you the ability to run like Python manage.py prod server. And mm-hmm. it automatically loads all of the things you wouldn't know you needed before to run. And so it makes that development story less of like, what is this G unicorn thing I need to run? How do I configure it? So it's kind of shipping with like more sane defaults so that things just kind of work out of the box. I would love to see that type of project brought back into Django, just like we did with tasks, so that that way Django by default just works in production and you don't have to learn a new skill to know how to deploy something.
So if I, absolutely. So I'm just wondering if I were to write a Docker file, would that then be like Python manage py prod server just as the command?
I would argue to use UV run.
Okay. Which fair is, enough.
Which is like a better way of running Python, in my opinion. I would do UV run manage.py prod server.
Okay, very cool. So this way your Django app is all like packaged up then, in a way. Does it take care for like a backend infrastructure, like databases and stuff as well? Or is it just the web server?
It's just the web server, but it does do tasks too. And I think they'll get there. I don't know about databases. Like it doesn't replace Docker or Docker Compose for running services, but they do the right hooks. So like I can use it to run Django Q2, which is just my like queue, so I can do offline tasks of choice framework.
You also mentioned WASM, which is WebAssembly, and I think that's also something that Cloudflare uses to run Python on their workers infrastructure. Is that a viable way for deploying Django as well? Could I run Django in like a complete serverless setup?
I have seen people run it with serverless. I believe they were using more of like the Dockerfile betas. Okay. I'm seeing some really cool, like run Django and type code in an application. There's also Nano Django, and Nano Django has and that's basically making like that, the Flask or the Fast API, the one file run Django setups. And there's a playground, which you can run or you run in your browser and you can make changes in Django code and you can see it in like a little preview on the side. That's really fascinating. That's using WASM. I'm not sure how much grief it would be to try to run Django like that in production. I suspect it's not quite baked yet, but it's exciting that you can do it at least in your browser now. And they even have Postgres running in your browser too, which just blows my mind to have like, you know.
I think that Django in the browser project like started a couple of years ago at one DjangoCon or PyCon, if I remember correctly. That was quite cool to see. Like this was... like done in a couple of days and then people ran Django in the browser and people were like, well, my Django application is always in the browser. And they were like, no, it's the framework, including like SQLite in the browser. That was really cool to see.
I love it. And what I dream of is the day that you can write, like with Django, you're writing like Python code. And so we have this like, kind of a sandwich, I guess, but you have like the server that's running, you write a view. And a view, like when somebody pulls up a website URL, they pull up a web page, it's going to basically talk to a view. And I dream of the day that you can write like one backend view and I'm talking to the database, I'm pulling some data out, I'm rendering a template. And I love the idea, like if everything works in WASM, and so I keep saying WASM, but WebAssembly, everything works in WebAssembly. So the fact that like we can produce something that we hand off to the browser. And there's no reason we shouldn't be able to say, this view works on the server and this view works on the client. And why do I care if the client to update itself talks over JSON or talks back to the server in some way? But the fact that like the client could run the same code in theory as what's on the back end and just shift the JSON or shift to getting data back.
Yeah.
And I love that whole concept that like in theory, we could write one set of code that could run in both places and still get database updates. And get things that like you can't really do if it's only in the front end because it can't talk to a database. And so like that's a way off, but maybe in 10 years we have that, which would be really interesting.
Well, isn't that something that a lot of JavaScript frameworks try to solve? I mean, the first one was something like Meteor or something. I'm not sure if that is even a thing at all.
I don't think it's a thing anymore, but I don't keep up as much. Yeah, it was a promise. Like, and they came to DjangoCon US years ago and kind of gave their pitch and it seemed really cool. Like, seemed like something that would be awesome, but I feel like JavaScript kind of got back into that front end React kind of game. And then now you've got Next.js and you have React Server and
yeah.
I don't know.
At that point, like use server and use database and inline SQL, I lost track of the React ecosystem a bit. But interesting to see that the ideas are like shared among projects and even in different ecosystems. What do you think would it take for Django to get there?
I would like to think funding would be great. So if somebody has some money they want to use to help fund ideas, that would be awesome. I think the tools weren't there 10 years ago, but now that we have WebAssembly and we have Python running in WebAssembly, I think moving to Rust and Rust supporting WebAssembly so quickly, I think that just makes it easier. So like, I think as Python, like Linux kernels now starting to use Rust more. And I think you're going to start seeing a shift where like when the tools have good WebAssembly support, I think it gets it gives people a little bit more inspiration to try experiments out and try things out. Django also has kind of like a new, one of the things the steering council did this last year is they created a new features repo on GitHub. And it's kind of just for throwing ideas out. And I'd love to see like those kind of ideas where people were like, nobody's done this yet, but the whole like, why can't I run Django in my browser and let it talk REST for me or let it figure out? Because who knows if that's even Rust? Like it may not even need to be like a REST API back and forth. But with new tooling, the AI shift, I feel like things are kind of in high gear now with being able to vibe code apps so quickly. I think that changes kind of like the way frameworks may need to work in the future too. So like AI is going to get better at writing these apps. We are going to be better at like writing these apps with AI. Laravel community is a community. They're, you know, PHP. Everything keeps going back to PHP today with us. But they're kind of like, Laravel is almost like the Django of the PHP community. And I'm sure people will hate that I say that who listen to your podcast. But to me, it's kind of true. But I really like what they're doing. And if I go look at it on GitHub, they have an MCP project, which is so you can write MCP servers and so that you can build tools where you let your LLM be able to make decisions using the app. So they can integrate their websites. A Laravel website can immediately use MCP support. And it's fascinating. And then they have another project called Boost. When Boost lets you build your own MCP apps using Laravel. And that doesn't exist in Django right now. I don't know that that exists in FastAPI either. So I would love to see more support for like, how do we do interesting things? Because I build MCP servers into my Django apps now for like, just to figure out how this stuff works. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating to look. Because I run like a job board, a newsletter, Django packages. It's really fascinating to be able to have a conversation with your web app and be like, what are the new jobs this week? Can you write a summary for my newsletter based on the last three jobs that came in? Or even having it evaluate jobs and look at, like I get thousands of jobs a year. We maybe post anywhere from like 6 to 12 a month on the website. Mm. And so a lot of them will be like a Rails developer position that mentions Django. And when I used to try to solve that problem with just keywords, I would get a lot of false positives because I want it to be Django jobs. I don't want it to be Rails developer jobs where Django's a prereq. And so with LLMs, you can solve that very well and say, read this job application. I only want Django jobs. I don't want, you know, Rails positions. And it takes a sentence or two and it comes back and I've ran thousands through and had zero false positives. So I love that we can solve things differently and easier using this technology.
So you mentioned MCP servers, and what does it take to build MCP into a Django app? Or maybe first of all, what is MCP? Because people think might not exactly know what it does in the backend. They are just using it in their coding agents. So it kind of connects your LLM to your application, but how?
Yeah, I think if you take an LLM and you just use it to ask questions, they're not very smart. Like I've known people who try to ask trivia questions to LLMs and they just like to make fun of it and say that they're dumb. And they are kind of dumb. They only know what they know and they don't really know what they don't know. But as soon as you give a tool to an LLM and you show it how to use it, it starts to get fascinating because it can go look up information and figure things out. And so like when you create a basic tool like a web search and give it to an LLM, then that teaches it how to use the web to get more information. And then they're really good at extracting context out of like data that it has. And so MCP is kind of a way, I like to think of it more remote, but it lets an LLM get inside your application and talk to it. And you give it a list of tools. Maybe it's like list models from your Django database. Maybe it's like run a bash command. And when you start to give it tools, what I do with jobs is review a job might be a tool. I might have approve a job might be a tool. And then that way it can look at the jobs. And when I say like, hey, go find the latest jobs, it's like, oh, I got a tool for this. It's called Latest Jobs MCP. And so it can go use that, look it up, bring back and say, here you go, Jeff, here's the last three. I gave you a summary because you like summaries. And it's just a different way to be able to interact with data, where these are things I could do before as a human, but it can kind of save me a couple steps and just kind of chop that job up and process it in a way that I want to be able to see it. So as far as making them, Fast MCP is pretty good. Mm-hmm. There's MCP Django. I think there's Django MCP. There's kind of a bunch of these now. Like, nobody is winning this. Everybody's experimenting right now with Django. And so, but Fast MCP is what I would use, or just MCP, the Python package. Both mm-hmm. of those are good starter places just to start without Django. And then you can always pull Django into them.
So the tools that you mentioned, like approve job would be a tool, or search jobs, or whatever. Technically, those are just Python functions, or what are they?
Sometimes they're Python functions, like the ability to pull data in could be. You can also give it other tools to work with and know, like, these are my list of models that I have in the database. You can use these to do objects.all on these, or objects.get. Once it knows, like if I give it a tool where it can use Python, then it's able to like write those queries, because it has all of Django built in, right? It already knows how to interact. It just needs context to know this is the data that I can look for. And these are things, or here's how I go to look things up. So a lot of times I'll make tools that aren't even as specific as like approve a job, but I can tell it, hey, my job listing model has a status field, and it's either, or it looks at the, I expose the actual Django model to it, and it sees that I have a status field, and it sees that these are the possible options. And so when I tell it to approve a job, it's saying, oh, I'm looking at your code right here, job listing, status, approved. And so it's magic in a way that's not magic at all. It's just, it has enough context to figure things out.
And MCP then is the protocol that exposes those tools to your LLM, right? So how is it different from, like, let's say, an OpenAPI specification then?
That's a really good question. I think because they're handling it with, I think, JSON RCP behind the end, it's like its own more efficient protocol to use. But it speaks JSON very, very well. Mm-hmm. And it's less like, if I have 100 different REST APIs, everybody builds the REST APIs completely different. There's not much that's common amongst it. Think of how pagination works over long lists. Some people use headers, some people use limits, some people use page, some people use num. I think with REST, the context is, the problem domain is so much bigger. I think with MCP, they kind of got it right by limiting the scope a little bit. And since they're talking raw JSON or JSON RPC, and I'm kind of talking out my rear here a little bit on that. I've not studied the specs. I'm just kind of going off of what I've kind of gleaned from, you know, podcasts and a little bit of reading. So like when I'm writing MCP servers, I'm taking that all for granted because I'm just working with libraries. They're already working with it. But my understanding is that it only has to worry about MCP. It's less worried about the fundamentals of REST because it sees objects in only a particular set of different ways. It's got smaller lens on the problem.
So would it be fair to say that if you want to have an MCP server, you would just like use something like Django MCP as you would use Django REST framework? It's just a different scope. The one is for providing an API to developers, and the other one is like providing an interface to an LLM. Is that the way how to model it mentally?
I would start with that because it will do things like look at your management commands in your app, and it kind of knows like, here's how you like, I think Django, I'm dyslexic, so I'm always going to say the wrong one. MCP Django, I believe, is one that has doc searching ability too. It can even look at Django packages, and it can find out good packages to use and recommend. It does have introspection inside your existing Django app. Like, the tool is designed to just install in your app and be immediately useful. It's not designed to be like a building block to write your own custom MCP servers or tools.
Okay.
And so, and maybe that's changed in the last 2 or 3 weeks since I looked at the code last, but.
Okay, got it. So another point that you mentioned was like to improve Django for the future was like funding. And I think this is another interesting property of a web framework that has been around for 20 years. It has its own foundation, and it can take funding, and it can translate funding into features. So I'm speaking of the Django Software Foundation. So why is that? Why does a framework need a foundation?
Well, we need one for like the boring stuff, like keeping the lights on, the trademarks, making sure that like releases get cut. We started taking on Django Fellows 10 years ago, 12 years ago. At some point, we started hiring somebody as a foundation to do the jobs that normal developers may not want to do. So like triaging tickets, security releases, there's a lot of stuff there that you know, the community can only go so far without somebody who's paid to do some of that plumbing and some of the boring work. And so we started with one fellow. Over the years, we picked up a second. This last year, we picked up our third fellow. And so next year, we would like to maybe hire a fourth fellow, or at least make sure that everything's sustainable. We've talked about hiring an executive director because, like, I'm not even, like, I've been on the board for a year, and I can spend 5-6 hours at least a week just trying to keep up with information and keep up with what's happening around us. Trademarks have to be refiled. We get grant requests from half a dozen to a dozen different organizations every month, and we're trying to promote Django and grow it internationally. And it's just a lot of work. So we have a 7-person board, and we all have a lot on our plates. And then we have the 3 full-time fellows. We have an administrative assistant that keeps the lights on, handles the books. It's just a lot to manage. And so fundraising is something we've been really focused on. We're going to try to increase it next year because we want to, you know, like I said, want to keep the fellows employed. We want to expand things, want to hire an executive director. And if you think of all the billions of dollars, maybe even trillions of dollars of companies who've used Django, it's really important to keep the foundation funded so that we can make sure, you know, releases get cut. If you look at when Django switched, like somewhere between Django 2 and Django 3, Django releases got really, really like solid, and they got to be very predictable. And that's definitely like, you know, you have a steering council that helps with this. Mm-hmm. You've got Django developer volunteers in the community. And then you have these like release managers and the fellows who are like kind of one and the same. And they're the ones kind of setting the cadence of like, we're going to kick 3 versions of Django out every 2 years. So we have like a, you know, 6.0, 6.2 release. That 6.2 release is going to be a long-term service, which basically means we're going to make patches for it for 3 to 5 years. And so those LTS releases are really important. But you've got, you know, someone who's not just a volunteer because, oh crap, something came up in my job. I'm not going to be able to do this week. But with fellows, that's their job. And they're the ones who pick up the slack, who make sure everything gets done. Security releases get followed up. Blog posts get written. It's just a job, you know.
It's a large job, I would argue. Because like if you get your tech news from just a Twitter feed or X, as it is called now, you might be tempted to think that the whole world runs on TypeScript or JavaScript. Do we have actual numbers on how many companies use Django or how many installations are out there?
Oh, I have no idea.
How big is it?
I mean, it's big. For a while, it was the biggest web framework in Django. Or I'm sorry, the biggest web framework in Python. But whenever you had some of the recent AI and LLM usage, Fast API just kind of came out of nowhere. And, you know, people are using it to write microservices and stuff. So. We do, JetBrains has a survey every year that they do where we can kind of glean how people are using Django. And Python has one too that they do. So I would look to that. Offhand, I'm not sure. GitHub Universe just a couple of months ago declared that TypeScript was the biggest language. Python was the world's biggest language last year. And this year they declared TypeScript to be the biggest language, even though none of the numbers showed that. They're just counting the number of like AI bots, I guess, that are creating TypeScript applications on GitHub. But none of these are things that are really in use. But like, you know, if you ever use, if you get really into like working with LLMs, there's a couple of libraries that you need. One's called TikTokin. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. But it just takes your prompts and it lets you count how many words or how many tokens are in it. There's not one of those for TypeScript or JavaScript. Mm-hmm. And so that's all, that's Python. And so if you think about the world's AI usage and how, you know, how big Python is, people aren't doing that with TypeScript right now. They're doing that with Python. So it's big. I'd say it's the second or third overall like web framework in Python.
Well, what do you think is the trajectory of Python itself? I mean, you mentioned it. It was not only last year, it was like a couple of years in a row, the most popular language by any means. I know. I mean, we all know how good these benchmarks are. But it was big. Does it continue to play a role in like the next 10 or 20 years? Or will that be really taken over by TypeScript?
I think it's going to continue to grow. It'll be more interesting to see next year because people are forking or their applications are writing TypeScript doesn't mean people are using it. I think if Python can figure out the front end story, because right now writing back end services with Python is a no brainer. We don't have a good way yet. Some people have been trying for a while to write like iOS applications, Android applications using Python so you get a GUI. If they can nail that down, I think Python, and I'm biased, I think it's still the easiest language to learn. You may not like the way tab indents work, and people like to complain about that stuff, but like, I think it's still the most readable language, and I think it takes fewer lines of Python code to solve various problems than other languages do. So I think that's kind of built in Python's DNA, especially because they teach it at universities now, too. I don't see it going away or dropping off much in the next 5 years. I think, if we can get that front end story a little better, I think there's a lot of room to grow, especially as more developers, you know, start taking up coding or more people start learning how to code.
If you don't like the indentation, there's also Brighton, right? this braces for Python is it called? But I think that's a joke project.
I haven't heard of that one. Yeah, I think Go formatting and the auto code formatters. Yeah. Like, I don't know why people care anymore. Like, I'm letting a computer format my code for me and other people's code. And I like that. I like not having the gripe about, you know, two space tabs or three space tabs. And I kind of just, when I accepted and started using Python, I just accepted that, like, I'm just going to go with the conventions everybody else uses. And it's not my, I'm not putting my flag here, you know, to like,
No, absolutely not. Love it. You are also organizing the Django conference then as DSF, right?
No, so I'll try to tell a long story very quickly. 11 years ago, I helped create the nonprofit called DEFNA, which is the Django Events Foundation of North America. And this is before I was on I've only been on the Django Software Foundation board for a year. Me and two other people created the nonprofit just to have DjangoCon US in the US and to try to stabilize it. And so 11 years later, 10 DjangoCons, 11 DjangoCons, we had one off year because of the pandemic. I think we did online that year, but it still counts. I think we truly canceled 1 year maybe. We've had it. And so we try to do DjangoCon US. It was in Chicago this year. It'll be in Chicago next year. We try to do 2 years in a row just to make it easier on ourselves because nobody's paid. We're all just volunteers. And so I used to be the president of that for probably 9 of the 11 years. I stepped down a couple of years ago as president, and we've got a nice board of people. We've got probably 20 or 30 volunteers that help with it. People rotate in and out. We've had this really awesome last couple of years where we have a lot of people from Africa have been joining, and I feel like they're learning how to run conferences too. Then they're taking that back to their communities as well. And it's just kind of grown into something that none of us expected it to, as far as this learning pipeline for other events. And so, yeah, it's separated from the DSF just in terms of like finances and stuff. That way, if there's a bad conference, it doesn't take the foundation out. And also, so there's no favoritism. Like, there's really no DjangoCon, but there's DjangoCon US, there's DjangoCon Europe, there's DjangoCon Africa. It's been a while since we've had a DjangoCon Australia. I hope that India and Japan and other countries join too, because really every country should be able to have a DjangoCon.
And those are amazing. I mean, I've been to one back in a couple of years ago in Portugal. That was pretty amazing. That was also where this Django in the browser came from. Pretty cool. So when is it? When is the next one in Chicago?
It is in September, I believe. I don't know the dates off the top of my head.
Okay, probably
2026.djangocon.us, and I think there might be some dates there. And the site may not even be quite styled yet, so that's something I'll see if
between myself and other people. Do you already accept CFPs?
We'll start, I think, in January. So if you've got a talk idea and you want to speak in Chicago, September-ish, January, and usually it runs for like 3 or 4 months. So you'll have plenty of time to put an application in.
Okay, very cool. So what makes a good CFP then? What does it take to get accepted?
There's probably a whole mix of things. Like, there's just certain core topics that we always need a good ORM talk. We always need a good REST, R-E-S-T talk. Rust with Django would be cool. Mm-hmm. I like the weird talks personally. Like, if you've got some idea for something that would be neat and you want to showcase it, that's always kind of fun. And even if you like show up to the conference, there's lightning talks. That's really a fun place to see the really weird things that maybe doesn't get picked up for a talk because maybe it's too niche. Mm-hmm. But like the web, like the Nano Django came out of that, where somebody had written Richard Terry, I'm forgetting his last name. He showcased that in a lightning talk and was awesome. Worked on it during the sprints. Those kind of fun ideas can sometimes come out of just like lightning talks, inspiration, and being with a bunch of Django developers that you probably can't see in person that often. So,
yeah, very cool. So it's 2026.djangocon.us, right?
Yep.
We put that in the show notes as well. And I always ask about like what is your favorite way to get people in contact with you? Are you on Twitter? Are you on LinkedIn? What's your favorite way if people want to follow up?
Good question. My website, jefftriplett.com. I'm on Mastodon. I think Webology has been my handles for when I learned PHP. I bought the domain name like web-ology.com. And so I'm Webology on X, formerly Twitter. I don't check that as much, but Mastodon's a good place. I'm on LinkedIn. I don't know what that is. I check it after conferences because I meet people and they seem really excited and, you know, like very LinkedIn's big to them. So I'm okay with that. But yeah, I'm pretty loud on Mastodon, and then I try to aggregate things over to Blue Sky and X as well. So if I blog or something, it all kind of goes there. So.
Okay, very cool. Yeah, then thank you for your time. That was an amazing conversation.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for inviting me on.
Thank you.
Will you endorse